Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Bruce Parker to the broadcast. Bruce is the Managing Director of IT Management Group, an IT consultancy. Until August 2008, Bruce was Chairman and CEO of Aeronet Systems, a specialized express cargo airline. He remains on the board of that company today. From December 1999 to July 2002, Bruce was an Executive Vice President at Sapient, responsible for corporate development, international growth, subsidiaries, and relationships with multiple large clients. He has been a board member of that company since 1995. From 1997 until 1999, Bruce served as Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at United Airlines. Under his direction, the company introduced United.com and also created and organized several joint ventures in distribution, including Orbitz, and participated in the formation of Star Alliance Technology Organization. From 1994 to 1997, Bruce was Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at Ryder System. Previously, Bruce held the Vice President position at American Airlines and Sabre Computer Services. Bruce holds an MBA from the University of Kansas. I recently caught up with Bruce in Washington, D.C., and our conversation focused on World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discuss Bruce's insights into building international teams, Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discuss Bruce's role in both IT and business as an executive at multiple companies, Principle 5, External Partnerships, as we discuss the lessons he has learned as someone who has both provided outsourced services and purchased them as a CIO and CEO, as well as a variety of other topics. Well, Bruce Parker, thank you for being with us, and welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Good seeing you again, man.
Great to see you as well. Bruce, you've been a CEO, a CIO multiple times over. You've been a leader at a consulting services company serving IT executives. As you think about the positions in your past and the experience that you've had, and reflect upon the future, what are some of the trends you see emerging or some of the ideas that you see going to the top of the list of IT executives?
Well, it depends on when. It's changed drastically over the years, I think.
Yeah.
But there probably, I see a few things that have been common threads mm-hmm. within it, mm-hmm. Across the years within it. It didn't matter when it was.
Yes.
Those that have excelled in what I tried to practice along the way with them, it's those that focused on value within mm-hmm. it of what they're doing, what they're producing, what they're trying to do with the organization they're working with, whether it's as a consultant or as, you know, as an internal employee manager in the company.
Yes.
So what's the value you're creating? Mm-hmm. Second one's partnership.
Okay.
So partnering in the business mm-hmm. within it, and again, the same thing, trying to make and understand the needs and wants of people, but as well the give and take that's required within to make those real successes happen.
Yes.
Probably the other one, I think, is the search for the opportunities. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of what your company does mm-hmm. with firms, mm-hmm. which is what is the opportunity in the space, the things we haven't thought of.
Yes.
And it's not just IT, it's the associated parts of the business that either affected by IT or just affected by different thinking.
Yes.
And so one of the things I think that I added in many of the cases mm-hmm. that I've been to was that, you know, those characteristics along the way. Mm-hmm. And then probably, you know, just thinking of, you know, individual characteristics a little bit beyond that was, you know, bringing to that game kind of a sense of integrity and trust mm-hmm. without trying to build those both in your staff as well as in, the customers that you're working mm-hmm. with. Mm-hmm. Internal or external.
Yeah, that makes good sense. I'm curious, Bruce, having been in IT for a long time, when you entered the game, IT was probably still, generally speaking, across at least U.S. corporations, thought of as a support organization. And a lot of what you've done across your career is building those bridges between IT and business. And I'm wondering, as you think about how IT has changed and how business has thought more of it as a strategic weapon as opposed to simply a support organization, how did you go about building that trust, building that integrity, and so that the business could learn to see you as a true partner?
Yeah, but it's two different views, I think, within it. Is one is proof of what you're doing, and mm-hmm. having, secondly, building the opportunity to do it.
Okay.
And so you got to deliver, kind of, number one, you got to deliver what you say.
Of course, yeah.
Out of it. And it didn't matter, early on, computers generally apply to accounting functions.
Yes.
With them, and, making the books straight and that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
With them. And I think, integrity was built at that time of trust mm-hmm. by doing the things, doing them in reasonable form, getting them done reasonably on time, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then it started really into what I would call the marketing functions mm-hmm. of companies with mm-hmm. them, which is now starting to get external.
Yes.
And or the supply side, which we now all supply chains, et cetera.
Exactly.
Partners, et cetera, within there. So part of that, I think, then became is, you know, the trusting and building the ability with your business partners inside the, in those times, different organizations or departments,
mm-hmm.
that they could envision kind of what you envision
mm-hmm.
within it in terms of thinking about what could be different with mm-hmm. it. And whether that was, instead of printing invoices, starting to electronically exchange them within it in supply chain.
Yes.
Or whether that was taking orders within it from a time-sharing-based system.
Mm-hmm.
So when we created EasySaber for the first time.
Yes, yes.
One of those, no travel agents, is just a consumer direct.
While you were at American Airlines.
Yep.
There, yeah.
So that was a, you know, there was a lot of visionary people there that was probably pushed the envelope anyway.
Yes.
But part of it is to have that kind of partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And then get on that boat with and paddle like hell because it takes off fast.
That's excellent. Your most recent job was as chairman and CEO of AirNet Systems, and so you have gone the what I think still is the atypical route of through the CIO's office of an organization to become the CEO of a company, not the CIO of that company in particular, yeah. but you've been a CIO many times over, as I mentioned earlier. I'm wondering what you took from your past role as a CIO into your role as a CEO. And as a second question, I am also curious if you think this is a path more executives will take towards the leadership, the highest points in the company through IT.
Well, let me jump to the first question.
Yeah.
That two-parter within it.
Great.
Some of the things, if you're a CIO in a major corporation,
yeah.
within, or even a medium-sized one, number one, some of the things you learn in that role and position, you operate and have control for a significant budget.
Hmm.
And so you're expending, like at United in the time I was there, we're spending probably $500 to $600 million a year.
Yep.
With a,
mm-hmm.
And many businesses aren't that big.
Exactly. Good point.
With it. And that was just the spend, not,
yes.
not the revenue side.
Yes.
Second one along the way is that you're running an organization that has a large number of people in it, typically,
mm-hmm.
and a large number of suppliers mm-hmm. as well. And so you're having to deal with all the issues that come about in those same things. Mm-hmm. So people development, strategy of people, mm-hmm. people pay, practice of hiring, practice of firing
mm-hmm.
within it, the whole management of talent within that whole organization.
Great points.
So you have a very large organization, you have a very large budget, and you can have a significant impact into the business
mm-hmm.
within it. And you build a partnership generally if you're successful within it in various different parts of the business.
Yes.
So typically you would also learn in that position the aspects of that, I'll call it the business that you're working in,
mm-hmm.
or the industry you're working in.
Mm-hmm.
So in the airline industry, for instance,
yes.
you know, you're going to learn a lot about marketing
mm-hmm.
with them. You're going to learn about things like the Advantage program.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to learn about loyalty programs. Another aspect, you're going to learn about yield management mm-hmm. and the very high-end mathematics. Mm-hmm. And the very other end, you're going to learn about gates and airports and the management structure of them. So you learn, in essence, I think, in that position, if you're really effective within it, you're going to learn about the processes of that business in almost every corner.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to work with every type of person within it, from the chief executive in that to the individual ramp agent within it, in some form, either in focus groups or directly one-on-one. And so as a result out of that, I think, you know, in my experience at least, I walked away with not only jet fuel in my blood, within it, but you understood that business very well.
Mm-hmm.
And you understood the levers, you understand the faults in it, you understand the opportunity points within mm-hmm. it. So you become, what I'd say, kind of a knowledge expert around the business itself.
Yes, yes.
So you walk away, I think, out of those positions with skill in regards to all of that,
mm-hmm.
within people, within processes of that business and community.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a lot about how to work and sell your own concept and ideas, how to put together, you know, cases of mm-hmm. how you're going to be profitable.
Mm-hmm.
Within it, in terms of the programs that you're putting in place,
yes.
and the systems.
Yes.
And I think at the same time, within it, you build a capability to manage future strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to run an organization like I just talked about, you're running a strategy on how to make that organization better,
mm-hmm.
more efficient, more valuable, and you're operating strategy into the business on how to make the levers work
mm-hmm.
in that business by using technology. So out of that, if you think about a, you know, chief executive, very much the same things.
Great points,
yeah. Large budgets. He's got a strategy to execute. He's got customers, internal and external,
mm-hmm.
with him. He's got a board and he's got governance, just like you'd have a governance inside an IT organization.
Yes.
With him. So you pick up probably one of the few jobs, really, that you pick up kind of that whole, I call it round robin of experience.
Yes, yes.
Particularly in a large information technology organization. Mm-hmm. Now, will more become that way or not? I don't know. You see it somewhat in financial services arenas. Mm-hmm. There's usually generally a big rotation through the CIO world, and where they'll end up back up into, and insurance companies as well, back up into chief of operations.
Yes.
Or the president of the company.
Yes.
Chief executive sometimes, but then sometimes not. Mm-hmm. It isn't a common path by any means.
Yeah. But it certainly isn't.
By that, but you know, it's one that's not shunned, I don't think, necessarily.
Now,
if you tend to take the corner position, which a lot of I've seen a lot of CIOs that go to the corner and stay in the corner. You know, they feel like they're under attack all the time. and stay there.
Yes.
Or stay in the space that they feel very comfortable in, the technology space itself. They'll never have the opportunity, nor do they probably ever want the opportunity with them. But anyway, that's kind of my reflection.
Exactly. That's great. Very, very well articulated, Bruce. And I think it actually, in some ways, shows that for talented IT executives as well as thoughtful business executives, this is a role that really has a tremendous amount of opportunity. Just as you point out, you're exposed to so many different things, and so much of it lends itself well to the CEO's role or to other leadership roles within the business. So it's really fascinating to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of warts in it as well.
That's true.
You know, that, and a lot of lessons learned, you know, as you go through.
Exactly.
So you're going to go, boy, was I dumb with that
one. You've got the scars to prove it, I'm sure.
You can come back and prove it.
Well, Bruce, when you... You spent time at United Airlines, of course, as we mentioned. You also spent time at Sapient as a consultant. And I know both of those companies, perhaps as well as others, you did a lot of building of those businesses internationally. And I'm wondering if you could reflect a little bit on your time having done so and think about how you went about building the teams that supported those organizations. In both cases, I believe in some cases, there was a combination of employees, contractors. How you thought about going about translating the values of a company based in the United States in both cases, and then and incorporating the what was best about the geographies that you were entering.
Let me just hit the ones that I've done.
Yes, please.
As a starter, and I think a lot of it has been a learning experience through it as well.
Yep.
So starting out at American, it was really where I started in doing a lot of international work. Part of that driven by the company. So the company was, you know, a USA-based centric company into Europe.
Yes.
Within, but it was primarily pure airline.
Yes, so. Exactly.
And we got into expansion of Sabre, particularly as a travel agency system, kind of a worldwide. So you're dealing with agencies, marketing to agencies, doing relationships with different companies within that to provide the services, et cetera.
Yes.
Within. Then we kind of launched into a business of creating, leveraging what we were doing at American and at Sabre into other countries. And so, for instance, we built the reservation system for the French National Railroad and the Channel Tunnel.
Very interesting.
With a large development group based in Paris within it, along with the SNCF. So, very interesting.
Yeah.
Fully successful, by the way.
Yeah.
Still operating today, if you can believe that.
That's great.
You know, so, legacies still live on. later on, then, with United in particular, within it, we built the Star Alliance, which I think you're pretty familiar with.
Absolutely.
And most people. And I still have a golf bag that says one of the founding members within it of the original group.
Yes.
Five airlines. I was one of the executives out of United that formed that coalition of trust among five airlines to go out and start to market and explore and then put together technologies, et cetera, to make that happen.
Yep.
And at Sapient, what I was working with, world-class, I'll call it world customers, global companies, world presence within, but as well as doing startup operations both in Europe within it as the company grew, the UK, Germany, within it, Netherlands, et cetera, as well as in Japan and in the Far East.
Yes.
So experience is kind of a long, and that's a consulting business.
Exactly.
Around information technology.
Yes.
And internet development system. So some of the things, just go back early on, then, you know, within it, and when I said it was a learning experience going through that. So if you can imagine back to American Airlines within the SNCF project.
Yes.
So in the SNCF project, we knew that we were, you know, from a man development, we commenced with our own organization in a selling relationship and the French wanting to buy mm-hmm. and having a need, selling our services. So that was a joint, myself and the technology side, as long with the side from the sales of America. And then we was really saying, how are we going to do this mm-hmm. within it after we get into the process of it? And what we did was then take staff out of our existing community of developers mm-hmm. inside within it, and then expatted them to Europe, mm-hmm. within, into essentially Paris.
Yes.
Which was a tough duty assignment. But if you can imagine, we're recruiting from a bunch of people in Texas. So a lot of people in Texas, had great hesitancy to travel that far.
Exactly.
That far away. And then even worse, from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so you can imagine the mix.
Yes.
And then at the same time, though, we decided that long term, because we're going to have a long term project, the project was going to run over 3 years in length, mm-hmm. That we needed to hire French people, mm-hmm. make them American Airlines employees, mm-hmm. and then they would become part of that development team within it over time.
Yes.
So we recruited out of France within it and brought those individuals within it, and probably three different waves of about 25 to 30 people mm-hmm. each time. Mm-hmm. And they would then come to Dallas, Texas, mm-hmm. become part of the integration of the systems that we were working on,
yes.
understand our flow, our culture, etc., mm-hmm. teaming, mm-hmm. and then they would rejoin the team in France.
I see.
So part of that was saying is, how do we get long-term, multicultural into that space?
Exactly.
We also knew that we didn't have all the horses we would need forever, within it to do all the development. So we did. We employed a lot of consultants. Mm-hmm. And brought a lot of consultants into play into the same project. Mm-hmm. And from the SNCF, we also brought in from their development groups.
Understood.
Within it. About yep. Probably out of the whole team development was around 350 people, probably, mm-hmm. in development, mm-hmm. running about 2 years.
Okay.
Plus. So we brought about a third of that in from SNCF, mm-hmm. matching to the overall team mm-hmm. within it that was based there. About a third, 50% of it coming out of Dallas, mm-hmm. and the remainder out of consulting groups on the inside.
I see.
So part of that was, was saying is learn as you went and what's successful with that. Mm-hmm. When you have all the typical things associated mm-hmm. with problem management, associated with people.
Exactly.
They get there and it doesn't quite feel like they're going to stay there within it. But,
exactly.
And you got to treat people within it to get them to understand the situation they're going to be in.
Yes. Yes.
The partnership side within it with the companies that later on developed, like in Star Alliance.
Yes.
Within it was really building, you do have to know the culture that you're into mm-hmm. within it, and the cultures of all the people that you're dealing with. And just a little bit of learning experience in that before you go engage is huge. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. And not just what you would read in a tourist magazine, but business culture. Mm. And there is some books out. Mm. that have been out. One of them that I was fortunate enough to stumble across a long time ago after being a little bit stupid in the SNCF project was a book by a guy named John Moles called Mind Your Manners, uh-huh. which was written probably back in early 90s, late 80s.
Okay.
And basically explained the business cultures of each of the countries in Europe, probably. Mm-hmm. And as I read this book, I'm aghast. No wonder that didn't work. Yeah. For instance, in this one, just one example.
Yes.
The French are in teams. They'll work in teams and work in multicultural teams.
Yes.
But the things, one of them that they like is individual recognition.
I see.
And so, versus a team-based recognition.
I see.
So if you just recognize the team, many ways they don't value that, and in many ways disrespect a little bit of that.
Interesting.
If you don't recognize Pete High.
Exactly.
For Pete High's capabilities and what he's done.
Understood.
To support that whole effort. Mm-hmm. And so afterwards, I thought back about all the team stuff that we did with it, and I go, gosh, no wonder we never quite got it all right. I struggled through it.
I see.
But things like that. And so you start to understand, part of a stereotype, but a lot of it is true. Mm-hmm. So the quick deciding cultures, the slow deciding cultures, etc. Mm-hmm. Right faux pas, the right things to do in the faux pas.
Exactly.
So anyway, that type of knowledge is very helpful. When we did the Star Alliance, we had people from literally every continent in that grouping. Mm-hmm. part of it was in three different principles, was really around the governance of an alliance.
Yes.
It was then also structured around marketing, primarily a marketing alliance. Mm-hmm. Third part was an operational side of the alliance, which information technology kind of spread in the whole ladder too.
Exactly.
So part of it was, one, building the relationships with each of those individuals, and then the agenda of what all that alliance needed to have, and then getting the buy-in of essentially every one of the equivalent chief information officers from all those groups that, yeah, we're going to put money behind that. Yeah, we see that valuable. Yeah, we're going to take leadership from a common entity to do that. So a lot of that, I think, is just building. You got to spend a lot of time. So I spent tremendous amounts of time on planes within a, going to locations and then spending a few days within each of their organizations or coming together as a group where we would then walk through all the things. And a lot of it was binding and building, you know, trust between respect across the groups.
Yes.
And probably as a supplier, when you're building a new capability in a foreign land, within, well, you know, a foreign land from where you're at, and it's a bit of a different story because you don't have any resident base there. So you're there and you're kind of greenfield at end with that, and you go, well, gosh, what do we do with that? Where should we go? So part of that is about plan before you go. Plan the market. Where's the market? Where's the companies that you want to, you know, in our world, the consulting in the world, where do you need to be?
Yes.
What's the value opportunity sets that you'll bring within that? Starting client relationships early.
Yes.
Remarketing yourself into both of the job markets that are there. So marketing who you are as a company then starts, and then as well. We called it shadow teams, but bringing people that are experienced out of your core base. They may not all come out of the U.S.
Yes.
They may come out of a different land, entering into that new territory you can operate in. And they assist them, the local hired management you have, or local hired talent, whether that was in tech design, architecture, alternative applications, or whether that was in terms of running the business itself. And then they would exit and repeat it back.
Right? I see.
Now, and then the other one is get the common culture within. So particularly now when you want, you know, if you build something that doesn't combine with your culture of the company that created it, then, and you isolate it, you've got a problem. So you need to ingrain them somewhat like we did with the Sabre Group back into the culture within of your company that you're, you know, creating it from. And that was Sapien's case. So we run them all through Sapien Start within, so they have a common culture within. They were all on the same intranet within it as in the U.S., et cetera, et cetera. And of course, obviously, they would use their language within it as well.
Exactly, yeah.
But that same value situation, you know, within it, the personal values within it, they would have along the way.
That's great.
So, anyway, interesting foreign cultures.
Yeah.
It, as well as to respect those and enjoy those.
So, yeah, yeah.
Well, that's one of the best things about international business is enjoy it as you go. So,
great points.
You don't ever want to fly into some place and say, God, wish I'd never come here. If that's the case, then you probably shouldn't have ever gone there.
Exactly, and it'll probably show that you're not so interested. Yeah, good points. Bruce, one final question. You've obviously been a consultant. You've also hired a great number of consultants across the years. And I'm wondering, having sat on both sides of the table, so to speak, what lessons you have regarding engaging vendors or external partners and how best to go about doing so.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting right now that a lot of the whole process around buying in the last, you know, probably 6 or 7 years is, what do you call them, procurement groups or other things have tried to take, I think, you know, a process of buying services, which is difficult to do, and commoditizing it.
Yes.
And turning it into an RFP, essentially, competitive bidding.
Yes.
And then bringing it on down. And I think it misses the whole point, Pete, within the that whole thing. One of the learnings, I think, that's, I think, coming out of also some of the Indian offshore,
yes,
has been is value within it. And the value point is really the critical starting thing, is what is it that you're buying within it, and what's the value that they're bringing within it, or will bring.
Yes.
And so what do you want to have accomplished, and what is that value? And then the supplier's viewpoint, how are they going to provide that value? Disregarding price. So if you don't get any value, you know, if you're going to get half the value you thought you want, if you were going to get out of something with that, then, you know, the price point didn't matter.
Exactly.
And I think that's been some of the disappointment, you know, that's occurred over time with the heavy swing.
Exactly.
You know, for price that has occurred. It was kind of now one people said,
that's right.
Geez, what's the value we got out of that? We got a large staff over there.
Yes.
A lot of companies built big captives as well. Mm-hmm. Captive centers there themselves within them, trying to get low price point. They have the same problem.
Exactly.
I can say, I'm not getting the value. Mm-hmm. So I think it starts there. So. Mm-hmm. Now, partners, I think, is just like on the other side, you know, within it, it's, you got to trust, respect. Mm-hmm. You got to have high integrity. You know, over time, what you'd love to have is mutual cooperation with each other, too. So, you know, you have as much trust in them as they, or as you would with your fellow employee and colleagues in your own business. Mm-hmm. You know, and that would be the ideal state in an IT organization if you're kind of in development space, particularly within that thing. So I think those are the things that you look for first, and then you can get around to the pricing, you know, price points and that thing. In development organizations, I think it's, you know, trend has gone away from where you had all the employees yourself within into one where you have now probably maybe management of that function, maybe some good business analysts within it, but you probably have now dominantly 80% of your development outsourced to somebody. Within it. Now the question is can you manage that effectively? Mm-hmm. Are they working on the right stuff within it? In most cases, a lot of companies aren't within that.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, are you getting the value out of that whole relationship to make the business opportunities you're working on successful? Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are the keys of the puzzle palace, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's confusing. There's no doubt about it. You know, as you're into buying and you're a guy inside of a large corporation and you've got a lot of procurement guidance.
Yes.
And say, we're going to RFP this down and, you know, they're going to provide four FTEs, you know, et cetera, et cetera. What's a quality FTE? And even if you say you got to test them, who knows if they're motivated or not?
Great point.
So anyway, tough world in that thing, but you know it's a mix and blend. I think
that
you'll continuously have probably more and more, less of your own employees, and more integrated with the larger groups that have broader responsibilities from the outside for you. Mm-hmm.
Do you advise starting small? So many, you mentioned, and as we've seen as well, so many companies who have gone whole hog in outsourcing, for instance, their entire infrastructure. And one of the problems we've seen, at least, is organizations don't have the governance to be able to manage the that massive undertaking. They sometimes think it's a silver bullet and are kind of overwhelmed once that contract begins and realize there are so many things they hadn't planned out. I wonder if...
Yeah, what happens with, you know, and I've done a large outsourcing and seen several others.
Yes.
But what I think what happens, Pete, it's two things. One, you know, when you're in the heat of doing all the deals, the deal itself, let's take infrastructure, define it all, et cetera, and you have one moment in time that you're doing it all, and you're kind of forecasting future and future needs, and you're never 100% right. And so you got a cost base then as well that you've created through this contract.
Yes.
And then over time, all variables change within the thing. So what the need is, where it's at, within, what's the cost of the equipment, what's the cost of networks, et cetera, et cetera. And what then builds up is kind of back onto the other point I was talking about in partnerships. So mutual cooperation and trust with each other starts to fall apart.
I see.
And it falls apart financially along the way because all of a sudden now you say, gee, I can get that server cheaper than what's in that thing. Mm-hmm. They're cheating me. Within that, you know, that's, you see a lot of that. You know, the vendor is now cheating you.
Exactly.
And so you got then the next problem that says, which then escalates to, well, I'm just, and if you got the capability, I'm just going to buy that.
Exactly.
And then what happens if you're the company that outsourced it, you build the organization to support that as well. So now you start to rebuild your systems engineering and your, you know, your equipment modeling guys to manage it and backup recovery and everything else. And you probably underestimated what your cost was. So you have this rebuilding of the infrastructure and infrastructure management. And versus kind of having some way to have an open communication with the supplier and arrangement saying, we're going to go this way regardless, but we're going to make things come along over time in a fair manner for all parties. So, and I think small is better, but again, you get into the same thing. The people, you know, if they really want to do it within it, they need to take big enough chunks or it's just a pain. So if you don't take a big enough chunk of it all within it to take away kind of all that management function that you got to have, you know, place it in somebody else's hands. Mm-hmm. Then you're kind of right back. You just added more cost to your organization.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The big leap of faith somewhere occurs within a lot of people, and outsource infrastructures are big pieces of it. So
yes.
Networks, you know,
yes.
Networks most common. And, you know, back in 30 years ago when I started out, you built your own network.
Exactly.
You had AT&T. They provided wires.
That's right.
And, you know, the rest of it was you.
Yeah.
Now you do have robust within it infrastructures provided. You have pretty robust within it hardware infrastructures as well. So, you know, people, you know, both sides argue whether infrastructure is a, you know, leveraged advantage or not. You know,
right.
For you know, competitive advantage.
Exactly.
Some businesses, but very few, I think it probably could be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Most not. The application layer, I think, is really the place where you have competitive advantage or not. And sometimes it's fleeting, because
mm-hmm.
rarely do you own it,
mm-hmm.
you know, forever and for a full time.
Mm-hmm.
So the Advantage platform being one good example of that, within which was a tremendous marketing tool. Built for 50,000 people. Well, how many people did it turn out to be? That's really kind of, I think, you know, the concepts of what you're utilizing this for within it is really the marketing, within competitive differentiating advantages mm-hmm. that you do.
Okay.
The infrastructure is nice because it allows a barrier, hurdle barrier,
mm-hmm.
but in many cases if people can go by that hurdle barrier now mm-hmm. for a piece of it, within you owning it doesn't necessarily mean that they can't get it. Within it, you know, they can go out and rent it now.
Exactly.
In today's world versus having to go out and pay $50 million for the computer network and
mm-hmm.
computers to run.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, that's neither here nor there. And it goes back and forth with it, obviously.
Exactly. The pendulum swings in both ways.
Both ways.
Yeah. That's a good point.
You know, and heavy technology change tends to unravel mm-hmm. those agreements,
mm-hmm.
particularly in either space.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did a huge outsourcing of mainframes within it and all your technology,
mm-hmm.
and along comes PCs within it, well, the PCs, the supplier, outsourcer never gave you those things.
Right.
You brought them in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that technology change within waves, I think, unravels. It's a natural unravel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these outsourcing deals.
That's right.
I've seen it on both sides.
Yeah.
And unit cost measurement never gets, you know, as you kind of put the two scorecards together within, you know, the supplier and,
uh-huh.
and the internal provider within. You know, everybody adds those up different. Every company. What's the cost of labor here? True cost of labor.
Yes.
Most people miss it.
Uh-huh.
What's their internal cost of labor?
Uh-huh.
Always underestimated. Always underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side of it, the other guys are, you know, maybe overestimating how much productivity you actually get out of one of their employees versus
mm-hmm.
your own.
So. Mm-hmm. Good points. Absolutely. Well, Bruce, I greatly appreciate you spending some time and sharing your thoughts across the many interesting experiences you've had in your career. Thank you for participating in the Forum on World Class IT.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. I've enjoyed it.
Good.
If you ever want to know the bad stories, let me know.
Excellent. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to MetaStrategy's 5 principles of world-class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business.
The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important first and foremost that the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles, namely people, infrastructure, and project and portfolio management, are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial aspect to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, or please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Thank you.